Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So let us know if there are any topics that or guests that we should have on the show. We're always looking for input. Maybe you'd like to be a guest on the show. Maybe you have a good idea for a topic. Shoot it over to live@nimsy.com and we'll make sure to consider that for a future episode. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are subscribed to NIMSY Insights. We are coming to you live today on a bunch of different platforms, but primarily LinkedIn is where the party's at. That's where people like to join us. LinkedIn, X, Facebook, maybe not X anymore because Elon's been up to some stuff and I don't think we're going live over there anymore. But YouTube is where you can find all of our old episodes. You can also find our archive of episodes in podcast format on whatever podcasts library you like, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Podcasts, all of that stuff. So go check us out there if you would like to listen to NIMSY Live episodes as you work out, as you commute in the morning, whatever it may be. Getting right into it, today we have a topic. Our friends over at Bolingo Consult, they have been on the show before, and my business partner has been over to Accra to visit them, so very familiar guest today, although I haven't had the chance to speak with Mary, who is going to be our guest today. A quick introduction to today's topic: Africa's rich linguistic tapestry and its many low-resource languages offer a unique challenge for localization project managers. With Mary, we will be exploring practical tools and strategies for navigating the uncertainties inherent in managing such projects and a crucial, often overlooked aspect, navigating uncertainties. This episode, we are going to reveal how to overcome these challenges and streamline your African localization projects focused on low-resource languages. A little bit about our guest today. Everybody meet Mary. Mary is a seasoned project manager at Bolingo Consult, specializing in low-resource language projects. With extensive experience, she skillfully navigates the complexities of managing localization efforts for Africa's rich linguistic tapestry. Mary's expertise lies in overcoming uncertainties and streamlining localization projects focused on low-resource languages. Mary, welcome to the show. It's always good to have a fellow project manager as a guest.
Thank you, Thaka. I'm excited to be here. I just hope I'm able to share my insights as much as I can.
Oh, well, for me, you've already shared your insights because you gave me a treat a few hours before we went live here. You sent me a whole PowerPoint presentation. So, and yeah. You know, this podcast, we keep it conversational. We're not just going to have a webinar format here. But I love this. I've been going through your deck. And for those of you listening, and maybe you want to learn more about low-resource languages, I would recommend reach out to info@bolingoconsult.com, I believe is your email address. And maybe you can get a copy of this deck. But I will be kind of featuring it here today. Project management for low-resource locales, navigating uncertainties. So to set the scene here, what is a low-resource locale?
Okay, so a low-resource locale is essentially a language that, it's a language that has a limited number of resources and it also lacks sufficient data when it comes to natural language processing and also computational linguistics. So essentially speaking, we don't have enough data sets. We don't have enough to train an algorithm to be able to output contextual language, basically. So we have your ChatGPTs, we have your Google Translate. When it comes to high resource languages, they are able to give you or reproduce strings or statements in context, which makes sense. But when it comes to low resource languages, we find that this is not the case. Usually we have outputs that are inaccurate. So essentially, that's what a low resource language is.
So basically, where there's not enough data to be training these engines, right? Because right now, all anyone wants to talk about is generative AI, and these models need to be trained with data. And there's just not a lot of data for these resources. I've had your colleagues, I believe it was Adi that came on and talked about it. Hi, Adi, I see you in the audience. Talking about the initiatives that Bolingo is doing to actually be publishing news in local languages, creating that content. I know that's not really what we're here to talk about today, but there's an overlap there, because with publishing local language news and local language blogs and local language content, what you're doing is you're essentially beginning to create that corpus of data that can be used to train engines.
Exactly.
Right. So everything's related. Everything's related. So that's what a low resource language is. And you're over in Accra and dealing with low resource languages all day, every day. What are some languages that we've heard of? I mean, I think it's probably fair to say if it's a language that I've never heard of, it's a low resource language. And I've been working in localization for 20 years, and I still come across languages that I've never heard of before. It's amazing. But what are some typical low resource languages that people have heard of?
Okay, so some of the typical low resource languages are Amharic, Igbo, Somali, Kikuyu, Tigrinya, Chichewa, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. But there are lots more, and sometimes a language being low resource can be relative, because you have some that are in the process of developing these data sets that are needed to train these systems and the AI. But on the other hand, you have some which are not even in the limelight and haven't been taken into consideration yet. Yeah,
makes sense. So just because these are low resource, and I like the term low resource languages, because it specifies exactly what they are. There's languages that there's not a lot of resources available out there. It doesn't mean that they're any less important. These are languages that people speak, people need to understand. They're critical languages for anyone wanting to enter these markets. It's a good idea to be going into these languages. What are some of the, when dealing with low resource languages, and I'm going to try to keep the conversation focused on project management, because that's your background and that's my background, right? I feel like we've had conversations about the challenges of translating into low resource languages, finding the resources available, the linguistic resources available for that. But what are some of the challenges from a project manager's perspective? And maybe you can share some of yours and I'll share some of mine afterwards.
Of course. So one challenge that we usually face is the lack of linguists or qualified linguists to work with, right? So in the African context, you realize that as much as we have linguists who go to school, who go through the system, they've achieved a high level of qualification, be it a master's or PhD, sometimes they aren't as experienced or as qualified as someone who hasn't gotten to that level of education. And I have an example, actually.
Okay.
So I think about last year, I was working on a project, and we needed to put them through a test to make sure that we maintain a high level of quality. And we found that we had linguists who were literally lecturers at their universities teaching these languages. Mm-hmm. And we also had, on the other hand, we also had linguists that hadn't reached that level of qualification. They were having their bachelor's degrees. Yes. And then, yes, a couple also had their master's. But in taking the test, you realize that the person who had the highest qualification or the highest qualification that would be acknowledged wasn't the one who passed the test. So you have someone who is a whole lecturer teaching other people the language in school, making sure that they are well versed in it, and they can't even pass a preliminary test to get to another stage. But you have others on the other hand who may not have as great a qualification. They are not that high up
on paper,
but then they have the expertise in the language, they have the expertise with the people on the ground, and that this is something you see a lot more often when it comes to African languages. So you get these kinds of situations, and then sometimes it's also the situation where people think they are more qualified than they actually are. So you have people coming to you, and then they are like, oh, I've had extensive experience working with this language, be it with translation or interpretation. And then you sit down with them, you take them through a preliminary test, and you realize that they haven't even had any sort of experience in the field that they want to get into. They've not had any internships, they've not had any job experiences, or they are functioning on basically hope and dreams. So that's one of the challenges that we face. Another challenge that we also have is the lack of resources. And this is not talking about human resource, but we don't have, like I said, we don't have the data sets for some of these languages. And we also don't have, we also find that there's a situation where linguists don't have access to certain resources in order to be more efficient in delivering on whatever projects that they may be working on. So you realize that they don't have access to the internet, or it's intermittent, and or they don't have access to up-to-date technology, basically, or knowledge of how to use this technology. So they are limited in their ability to be more productive and efficient.
So like,
and it's a very big
like the
problem.
Most qualified linguists aren't able to use, aren't trained to use the tools. So
exactly.
So it's like you might find the best qualified linguist, but if you're using MemSource, or I'm sorry, if you're using Phrase to, don't kill me, people at Phrase. If you're using Phrase to translate and they don't know how to use it, then you can't use them. Right?
No.
Yeah,
especially when you have a project that has a very strict deadline, and you don't have enough time to sit down and train them before they are able to use it. And for some of these people, you find that they are not of the younger generation, so sometimes it's a bit more difficult for them to adapt to the tools that we have in the system these days. Because for them, some of them, even accessing maybe, a Google Doc or an Excel sheet can be a bit complicated.
Yeah.
It takes a while to train them to understand how to use some of these tools and technologies. And it can impede progress. It can cause a barrier between ourselves and them, because then they feel that we are trying to change the system, but they sometimes don't realize that times are changing, and you also need to change with the times.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a big problem that we try as much as possible to tackle, but also they have to change their mindset and be willing to be open to new learning experiences, basically. Yeah.
I know for projects that I've worked on in the past, right? So, I used to do work for this cancer research company here in Seattle long time ago, and we would do low resource languages because they were doing clinical trials in different countries, like for malaria and for cancer and all of these different medical trials, and they needed to have those languages. And I remember, for like Spanish, fine, we use our regular workflow, right? Portuguese, fine, we use a regular workflow. French, fine, we can use our, but then for Haitian Creole, right? Or for, some of these more obscure languages, I just had to say, it's okay if you don't use Trados. Just here's the document, send it back to me in whatever frickin' format you want, And you know what I'm saying? So they kind of, they kind of got, now is that excellent project management on my part? No, it's kind of lazy. No. It's kind of lazy project management. But you know, I had a deadline to meet, right? And there was literally, I remember, for, I use Haitian Creole, because there was literally one guy, because it was highly specialized content. It was medical, it was scientific, right? And he knew there was only one guy. So he had all the power in that relationship. He's like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, all right, fine. Just send me a Word doc back. But yeah, if there's challenges, if you know, people don't know how to use Word docs, then it's like, okay, where do we go from here?
Exactly.
Right.
Yes. So that's the thing. It's something that's it's an ongoing challenge that we have to find more creative ways to deal with on a day-to-day basis. So yes, of course. Now more people are more well versed with Google Docs, but there are some who still prefer to do the paper situation, which isn't really ideal at all.
Yeah.
So we try to train some of these people, give them the basic skills, so that they're able to have access to these resources, and then it makes the workflow more efficient and then much easier on our end as well.
Yeah, and also alongside the, you know, maybe the lack of training around how to use Google Docs or how to use an online TMS system, is you also run into issues with internet connectivity. Right.
Oh, yeah.
You're dealing with translators. You're working with translators that are maybe don't have access to internet or high speed internet, or, you know, a lot of these. I remember a big thing was rolling blackouts. Right. When, you know, some of these locales, it's, you know, every weekday from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock that they didn't have power because there was only so much power to go around and they'd cut the power to them. Right. So there you have to work within those those logistical, you know, infrastructure restraints as well.
Yeah.
So going back to your deck here, I want to go back to what you originally talked about with you test different you test the professor. And then you test some person with just a bachelor's degree, and it turns out you know, the less qualified person actually had a better translation. But what is your experience with defining quality for these languages? Because that was one challenge that I've always had, is if I want to test the quality of a German translator, a French translator, a Spanish translator, there are I can test them and I can say this translation is accurate, it's grammatically correct, the words are spelled correctly, all of these different things, because there's clearly defined standards, right? There's dictionaries, there's grammatical structures, there's style guides that are commonly accepted by everyone that speaks these languages. And one of the struggles that I've faced before is that for low resource languages, there's no standardization. There's no, even when it comes to things like spelling, right?
Yes.
People could spell words two different ways, and neither of them is really wrong, because there just literally doesn't exist a dictionary that's standardized. They don't have the Oxford English Dictionary for their language to go back to. So how do you deal with that?
Okay. So I think I can put this more in context with another project that I had to deal with. So the language we were dealing with at that time was MOSI. And MOSI has different scripts. So we had a translator who was using one script, and then we had a reviewer who was also using a different script. So in doing quality assurance, we realized the differences in that there were similarities, but then the differences were very noticeable when it came to the various ways they spelt the words. So what we did was that we had them, we made sure that we had regular meetings with them so that there is an understanding and then there is an agreement on which script to use. So that's one situation that we had. In the end, what we had was that they both agreed to use one of the scripts that was more accepted by the people who speak the language. And that's the script we ended up using throughout the project. So this is a way that you can go about it. Usually, if you have two people using different scripts, it's better to make it a more collaborative effort, right? Mm-hmm. So you make sure that you meet with them on a regular basis. It's something that works. You meet with them, you discuss the different scripts, and then you pick one that is more standardized or more used or more familiar with the people that are going to be receiving this information or documents, whichever one, basically. Yes, so that is what we did for that particular situation. But then you have issues where you have the translator and the reviewer not being able to work collaboratively like that, because maybe you might be providing translation from one service provider and then review from another service provider. So usually in that situation, what you find is that it's always best to have a feedback loop, right? So you have your initial translation, then your review, then you go back to the translator to look at the comments of the reviewer, basically. And then if he agrees, he accepts it. And then if there's a disagreement, then there's arbitration. Then they can both air out the reasons why they chose the scripts or the language that they decided to use. And then they can reach a consensus on the way to move forward. Basically, yeah.
Yeah. So basically, they got to work together, but they got to be able to work together.
They have to be able to work together.
Which is the challenge, right? You know, I just realized, coming from my America-centric point of view here, I've been kind of asking questions and having a conversation based upon the assumption that we're translating from English into another language, right?
Yes.
But I want to ask you, is that the primary language pair, or are there other language pairs? Do you get, because it can be hard to find, you know, in English to Igbo translator, English to Amharic translator. But what about if you need something translated from Amharic to Igbo, right? How do you manage that?
Right.
Or from from Croatian to Igbo, right? Or from Portuguese to Amharic, right? How do you handle those situations?
So these language pairs can be very difficult to find. To find someone who is able to provide services for this language, it's a very, very small talent.
I know, that's why I ask. I've always struggled with it.
Yeah, so usually at Willingo Consult, we have a vendor manager who usually handles the recruitment aspect. But then there are situations where because of time or because of any sort of constraints, you, the project manager, have to help with finding some of these people. And it can be a daunting and a time-consuming task. But what we tend to do is that we tend to look to academic institutions within the regions that these languages are spoken, or we go to language preservation institutions to find linguists who can provide services for these languages. For example, in Ghana, we have the Ghana Bureau of Languages, and they are a preservation institute. So usually they are able to provide linguists who have expertise in providing services in this language pairs, this less requested language pairs. So we've even had a situation where we had to find somebody who can speak Ewe, but can translate directly into French. And we found that person through one of these institutions, and they had proven experience. They had the necessary expertise and the qualifications to assist with the project that we were working on. So basically, that's the way we go about it. But I mean, sometimes you can also find out from the linguists that you've worked with in the past in one of those languages. Mm-hmm. So you might have worked with somebody who did Ewe, but then they might also know somebody who is able to provide the service you need from Ewe into French, right, or Ewe into Spanish.
I find when looking for a translator, my best resource is the translators that I'm already working with.
Exactly.
I just ask them, because translators talk to each other and they're happy to refer their colleagues and friends.
Exactly. Over. There's an entire community out there, and they're sharing ideas. They're sharing new technology. They're sharing new ways to go about the work that they do to improve work processes. So they're the best people to always go to.
And I say translators, but I also find that working with lower resource languages, where there's not as many professional translators out there, just because there's not, maybe perhaps it's because there's not enough demand to sustain such an industry full time for people, right? So I end up working with folks that aren't necessarily translators by trade, but they do translational work. And this has, I want to bring this up because I think we don't think about that over here a lot, like when clients are putting together requirements for who's going to be a translator, right? And what I mean by that is clients or associations and standardization boards that we have in our industry, particularly those ones run by other translators and interpreters, we like to come up with these standards on, in order to translate, you must have a degree from a university in translation, you must have XYZ experience, you must have blah, 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 blah. And I mean, that's a whole different topic, but there's a lot of gatekeeping, I think, that goes on in our industry within the translator and interpretation space. And it's around setting minimum requirements in order to work. And I think those requirements, set with the best of intentions, usually, set with the best of intentions, can sometimes gatekeep others out of our industry for low resource languages because they just don't exist out there.
Yeah.
Right? If you're getting too picky about the translators that you're using. So how do you manage that, where, you know, the balance between making sure that you're finding someone who's qualified, even though they may not be a full-time professional translator?
So we've had situations where clients have come to us and they've asked for experience for a specific amount of years. It has to be 5 years of experience. They have to have a PhD or a master's to even qualify to work on the project that they want us to assist them on. And when you are on the ground, you find that this isn't feasible, like you said, for resource for low resource languages. It's right, just not right, feasible. Right. Yeah, there are people out there who can provide the services, but they don't have an MBA in translation or interpretation. But they are good at what they do. Mm-hmm. They might have the 5 years of experience or even more. They might even have 10 years, but just because they lack that one qualification as an addition onto the ones that they already have, they are way late for that particular position. So what we try to do is that we like to keep an open line of communication with our clients. We let them know that this is what the situation is. We do have someone who is qualified. We do have someone who has proven experience that we've worked with time and time again. But then they don't have that 5 to 10 years of experience. But then you also find that they are not willing to compromise, or they are not willing to meet you halfway. And this can hinder the work that we do.
The linguist or the client?
That's the client side.
The client, yeah, exactly. Yes. And I think that's it's because they just don't understand, right?
Exactly.
They don't understand the reality of the situation.
Exactly. So this is why we have to have this conversation about some of these complexities, and then the best ways to adapt to them, and the ways we can work with them, and not just bring in our biases or our standardizations and then leave these people out of the loop. Because this is the reality. This is the situation that we are facing. You might want your 5 years experience, 5 years experience, 10 years experience, or you might want your MBA or PhD. Mm-hmm. But you can get the same quality without the requirements that you are bringing on board.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's something that they need to understand, that as much as you have your requirements, we are willing to work with you to find ways to get the people that you want for the project. But then there is also a better solution, which is to also go with those who have the expertise that you need without necessarily having the certifications that you require. Yeah. Like you said, there are associations, there are people, organizations that they've set a standard for themselves, or they've set a standard for the industry, and then they expect you to, in order for you to be a part of this association, you have to have this qualification.
Right.
If not, then it's not a possibility for you. That's not the case.
Yeah.
So you even find that even with the people who have these qualifications, well, on the linguist side, even for those who have the PhD, the 5 years experience, 10 years experience, they might not even have what you need. Or they might not be expert in the field that you need them to provide a service in.
Yeah.
So that's something that we really need to consider and take into account when writing or stating these qualifications or certifications, basically.
Well, and I think it's just misunderstanding or lack of knowledge, education about how things work in the real world, is particularly, I'm just going to use Africa. I mean, it could apply to a bunch of low resource locales, right? But let's use Africa as an example. Because one thing that I think is, I don't think it's a controversial statement to say this. I think it's pretty obvious when you stop and think about it, is the language services industry is very diverse and it's global, right? But there's like, a lot of the industry has kind of left Africa out of the conversation, right?
Yeah.
As far as the global industry, right? And we can have a whole different podcast. We'd bring Adi on for that one. We could have a whole different podcast about the reasons why and what we do about that, right? But because of that, is Africa is kind of developing its own little language services, you know, culture, and the way things that are run in Africa. And it's not exactly in alignment always with the way things are run in the, you know, the US and Europe and the rest of the language services industry. And this is something that I really started to realize. You know, what's been a really great resource is the Africa LSP podcast. And
yes.
Can I plug the Africa LSP podcast? Yeah. So if you're out there, there's a great podcast, and it's run by the folks over at Bolingo. It's called the Africa LSP podcast. And it's really interesting because it kind of opens the eyes to what they're dealing with as an LSP in Africa, kind of the challenges that they're facing and the things that they come across. And in a place where, you know, the industry, and I don't want to say the industry isn't as mature, but the industry isn't the same as the rest of the world and how we do it here. So go check that out. It's available all over the place in podcast format, the Africa LSP podcast. It's a good listen if you want to learn more about how things are done over there. But you guys are also doing a lot of work at Bolingo to kind of change that. Not only are you running a business with Bolingo Consult, but you're doing a lot of, I would say, initiatives and outreach and community building, bringing people together in this space. Can you talk a little bit about kind of some of the stuff that you're doing from that regards?
Okay. So at Bolingo Consult, our mission is to raise the profile of African languages around the world.
Right.
So we try as much as possible to create spaces for people to gain more insight into the industry and how to come together to work towards this particular goal. So Bolingo Consults is one of the founders of the ALCA, the ALCA Association. So it's an association that has basically been created to bring together the LSPs in Africa so that we can have a more standardized approach in the industry, basically. And It's been helping so far, and they are going to be having their first conference in August. So I urge all of you to go over to their LinkedIn page and also like, comment, share, register for that conference. I'm sure it's going to be really, really insightful.
What's the name of the conference again for the listeners?
ALCA, so African Languages Conference Association.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so ALCA is one of the initiatives that Golingo is a part of. Another way that we've taken to helping to raise this profile of African languages is we also have books that we are translating into the African languages. So we had an initiative where we had writers share their books with us, and then we translated these books into their various languages. So we had one writer who wanted his book translated into Kinyarwanda. And then we also had another one who had a book about superheroes, and she wanted it translated into Cree so that children in areas where English is not the most spoken, or it's not something that they really have access to, are also able to access these kinds of stories to inspire them. Another book that we have is the AMI series, which has been translated into about 7 African languages so far. We have Ewechi, we have IsiZulu, we have Arabic, we have French, and a few more. And this is a children's book about the environment. We want to involve children in understanding the impact that they have on the environment and how that also has an impact on us. But at the same time, we want them to be able to access information in their local languages or languages they are more conversant with, and not leaving them out. Because I believe we can all confidently say that every little counts. Everyone has to be involved, and to be involved, they have to understand the reason why they need to be involved. So this is one. These are some, just a few of the initiatives that Golingo Consult has taken up, and we are just trying to make sure that everybody is able to access all the information that they need without being left behind in their various languages.
I love it, and I just dropped into, if you're following us on LinkedIn, I dropped into the chat where you can go follow them. I'm ashamed that I'm not following yet. Renato's following them. Of course he is. Go follow the Association of Language Companies in Africa on LinkedIn. I also dropped into the website if you want to find out more information about that. One thing I love about the work that is being done over there by you folks at Bolingo and by others, right? It's a team effort for sure. Yeah. Is that it's all about, it's very much, for the African industry, profession, whatever you want to call it, for Africans by Africans, right? And I love that, right? You're trying to build something. You're not trying to. You're building something that works for you without having to fit the mold necessarily, but while learning from the rest of the industry around the world, but without exactly fitting into the mold. And I absolutely love that. It's because it's, to me, it's something new. I thought I knew something about the language services industry, and then I met Adi and Emmanuel, and I'm just like, oh, okay, there's a whole different world out there that's going on. So very cool. Well, thank you for that. Everyone go follow them. I want to get to chat here, see if there's anything going on in chat. Maybe there's some comments that we can respond to here. Like I said, I dropped the links in there. Let's scroll down. I wanted to bring this up. Not that it's a question, but Drita says, estimates of the number of languages spoken in the world range from 6,000 to 7,164, but there is no definite count that is considered a scientific finding. The number is constantly changing as new languages are discovered and others are lost. I just thought that was a really interesting data point for a number of reasons. First and foremost, because we don't even know how many languages exist in the world. Like, we don't even know. So that's the first point that's interesting to me. And the second point that's interesting to me is the part about as new languages are discovered, meaning we're still discovering new languages, and others are lost, which brings into the conversation language preservation, right? Which is something we haven't really touched on because we've been focused on project management here. But language preservation is, it's a big thing, because as globalization rages forth, a lot of the native languages around the world are actually going extinct. There's languages going extinct every year, as you know, the last native speakers are dying out. Have you ever been involved in any language preservation work? Is that something that you do? And if not, that's okay. Like that's a whole different conversation, right?
I wouldn't say directly.
Yeah.
But then we have
Me neither. Like, I've donated to the Endangered Alphabets Project, but that's about it. Right?
Yeah, sure.
I haven't done anything myself. I'm a social media warrior when it comes to language preservation, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yes. So I think one way we've done that at Bilingual Consult is via cannews.com, where we publish news in the Chi language. So the entire website is in Chi, and then we have contributors who post articles on a regular basis in the language, and I think that's one way to preserve it. I mean, this creates the data sets that we need to train these systems to take it from being a low resource language to being a high resource language. So this kind of platform is one way to do that, and you kind of see similar platforms popping up here and there, right? I think we have other platforms in Ghana where they have their sites in other local languages like Aware and Fante. So yes, so akanews.com is one way that we do that.
Yeah, and for those of you that are interested in finding out more about akanews.com, I'll drop a link here in the LinkedIn. But also, we did a whole different podcast. So search for it on Nimzy Live, and you can find out more information. But yeah, daily news in Tree and Fonti, which is very cool. I like. But I'll hold my comments on that, because I think I've already commented a lot in the other podcast on that. Back to the chat here. Let's see who we got here. Michelle says, creating and adapting your workflow for different low-resource languages is absolutely critical for the success of a project. Definitely not bad project management from your side, Tucker. That's good, because I said I had to give a special treatment to low-resource languages. Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate the sentiment. I don't think I said it was bad project management. I said it was lazy project management. Subtle difference there. But I still appreciate the sentiment. Stephanie says, the educational systems of most African countries is highly responsible for this, Mary, as they have not integrated their native languages into their training systems, and CAT tools aren't well known across Africa, as you may think. I think this is when we were talking about the difficulty of finding linguists, A, finding linguists, and B, finding linguists that can, you know, work in Google Docs or work even in the CAT tool, right? And yeah, I mean, my comment on that, Stephanie, is you're not wrong, right? The educational system of most African countries is highly responsible for this. You know, I would say you're not wrong, but so what do we do about it, right? Like, to me, it's like, well, we can sit here and say who's to blame for, you know, the lack of training, who's to blame for languages dying out. You know, that's a whole nother conversation, is around, well, you know, especially in colonized countries that are speaking English and French primarily, you know, well, whose fault is it? Is it the educational systems? Well, who created the how far back do you want to go, right? And it's to me, it's more interesting to focus on, like, okay, this is the reality of the situation. What do we do about it? Like, what can I do? Like, if I'm working as an LSP and I am having a hard time finding qualified linguists that are trained in the tools that I need them to be trained in. Well, can I, as an LSB, create a training for them, you know, create an e-learning or something? So did you have any comments on this, Mary?
Yes. So like you said, she is right. She is right about it. She's not wrong. Because even I have had to deal with this particular situation during my time. And you realize that the people teaching don't know what it is. So they can't teach what it is. And it's not their fault, per se. It's just what the system is. But then we have to find ways around it, or ways to provide this information to the people who are qualified to do their job, so that they are able to do it the best way they can. So as much as she's right, we do have to give them the tools to be able to have access to these things and be able to use them the best way possible.
That's all you can do. All right, going back to the chat here. I put a bunch of links in here. Okay, I think that covers up. Says, thank you, Adi. We are looking forward to the workshop with you and Mary at the ALCA Annual Conference in 2024. So, awesome. Is the workshop going to be this on this topic?
No, not the exactly. So the workshop is going to be on project management essentials in the localization industry.
Awesome. Love it. That's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I've done a workshop or two myself on that subject. Well, let's get back to the, because you gave me this deck, and I want to go, we went through a lot of the challenges, right, through our conversation. But also in this deck, you have some strategies: assume and accept risk, contingency planning, resource management, regular communication, innovative solutions, setting realistic goals, innovative solutions, usage of collaborative tools. And we don't need to pull the deck up here and have a conversation about it. But A, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the strategies to manage this. And B, I wanted to remind people that there's a deck so that they can reach out to Bolingo afterwards if they want a copy. So just kind of the marketing brain is always, it's always working. So tell us about some of the strategies that, you know, I know we've talked about some already, but what else you got for us?
Okay. So before I get to the strategies, there's one more challenge that I think needs to be given more attention.
Okay.
Which is the, it's a communication challenge, basically. So you find that in Africa, we have a highly diverse amount of languages and a diverse amount of cultures. And you work with people from different countries, from different regions, from different cultures every single day. And you realize that the way you understand something isn't the same way that they understand what you are talking about or what the situation might be. So you have sentence A, I understand it one way, and the other person understands it another way. It's something that comes up a lot. It's not that they don't understand the language you are speaking, they do, but they sometimes take it out of context or out of cultural context. So I've had situations where I'm working with linguists from, let's say, Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And you find that there are subtle cultural differences. They deal differently with the various situations, and it can, if you don't understand some of these cultural differences, it can put a strain on your relationship with them or even sever it entirely. Because for them, some things are considered disrespectful that in my culture isn't considered disrespectful. And I think that's one thing that in the African context, we really have to pay attention to. We have to make an effort to understand the people we are working with in order to have a more collaborative effort and to be more efficient in the way that we work together, basically. Yes. So I think at Bolingo Consult, one thing that we have done when working with people in the new market is that we have more of an adaptation session where we speak to someone who is an expert in the cultural differences. They train us on the cultural nuances of the market that we are going to be working in or working with. And then that way going in, we know that these are the differences and these are the best ways to approach such differences between the two people or the two teams, basically. And I think more companies can, or more people, linguists can take this into consideration moving forward, so that it avoids certain strains on the relationships that you may have with each other, basically.
That's a really good point. And that's, I just want to hang here for a second. Because I feel that's something that exists not just in Africa, it's everywhere. Cultures are different everywhere, right? And I feel it perhaps maybe is not as big of an issue in the European, let's just say the West, you know, European, America, you know, Asia, because we've had this more global industry that I was talking about earlier, that for whatever reasons, we can talk about those later, but Africa's kind of been left out of, right? So we kind of have developed, everyone has their own culture, but as an industry, we kind of have an industry culture, right? Yeah. So there is a common language that we spoke, and Africa perhaps hasn't gotten there yet, where you have an industry culture, which to me is super fascinating, because I was actually kind of disappointed when I came into this industry, because I had my head full of university stuff about different cultures and stuff. I'm like, oh, I'm going to work with different cultures. And I remember I had a boss that, you know, I asked, like, well, don't we have to adapt this and that for the way that their culture works? And he just looks at me and says, Tucker, you're paying them. you can do it however you want. You're the boss. And I'm going to say, oh, okay. I guess that's how it works here. But, I still chuckle about that 20 years later. But just a kind of a philosophical question. Whose responsibility is that? You know, because cultural sensitivity and understanding one another, it goes both ways. It's a two-way street.
Of course.
Whose responsibility is that? Is that you as the project manager? Is that your responsibility to work around their culture? Or is it their responsibility as the employee, basically, to work around your culture, or is it both?
Yeah. So just like you said, it's a two-way street. We both have to learn how to work around each other's culture. I mean, we all have to come to a compromise, right? We all have to compromise and meet and come to a point where we both feel that we are both comfortable in the situation. Mm-hmm. So I think I've had a situation where I was working with a linguist from, I think, Kenya or so, and they don't find being sent contracts as a respectful thing. They just, it's, for them, it's an insult on their person. They don't want to be sent.
What is it that's an insult on them? I couldn't understand.
All right. So they feel that they prefer a more cordial relationship. So they want to have conversations with you and not you just sending them emails or contracts for them to sign, right?
Yeah,
they prefer a verbal agreement, which is something they respect more over something on paper.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that's something you have to consider, right? But at the same time, they also understand that you're a business and these are documents that have to be in place.
Yeah.
So, like I said, it has to go both ways. We both have to compromise and meet ourselves halfway and come to an understanding that works for everyone.
Makes sense. Yeah. No, thank you for that. I appreciate your insights on that. All right. Let's get it. So we've gone through the challenges. Let's say, and we're running out of time here, but talk a little bit about some strategies, anything that we've left out through this. And I can bring up slides. If you want me to bring up slides, I can, but I'd rather. I'm just happy talking to you. All right.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing is to assume and accept risk. This is the African continent. Risk is something that is always at the next corner, and you always have to assume that any situation might pop up. A good example is during the recent protest in Kenya. I was in the middle of a protest when that happened with a Kenyan linguist, and due to the intermittent internet outages, it became a bit of an issue communicating with them and also progressing as needed on the project that we were working on. So, and I assumed that anything could happen at any point in time, because this is the reality on the ground. So I had a backup linguist who also has experience in working in the language that we required, and then they were able to take over and fill in that gap when that situation occurred. So you always have to assume, I think you should always try to assume that there's going to be some level of risk or some form of risk, and to accept that this is something that might happen, and then come up with a contingency plan about how to deal with it if it does pop up. We don't want it to, but it does. And so we have to find a way to work around it, basically.
You've got to plan for it, right? You never want stuff like that to pop up, but you got to plan for it.
Yeah. And another thing is you find that you have to come up with more creative ways of solving problems. Like the example that you gave, that you had one linguist, only one, and he didn't want to work with the software that you were using. So you had to make a concession to give him the document for him to work on and send back to you in whichever format he prefers,
right. Basically.
Yeah.
And say, so, thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate. Oh, you're going to be a week late. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, because you have no choice.
Exactly.
That's the only
exactly.
one you have. So they dictate the terms on which they prefer to work.
Pretty much.
And
it's good work if you can get it.
Yeah, and you don't have much of a say in that situation.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, we have to come up with creative solutions. We should try to come up with creative solutions when we face such issues when they pop up. And I think another way that we try to work around some of these things is to have more of an efficient way to manage our resources, because, well, again, back to the example you gave, right? You have one linguist that can work in this language pair, or that can provide the service you need. And then you have maybe two or three requests with them coming in. They all want it today, tomorrow. You have to be, you have to have an open line of communication, let them know, the client know that this is the situation. I know you want it tomorrow, but it's just not feasible. It's just not how it works.
And
it's not something that's
awesome. Sorry. Yeah, I was just saying, you have to be able to have that conversation in a way that really informs them without them mm-hmm. walking away thinking, oh, you just can't do your job, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So
that is a way that we try to go about it. And when those situations arrive, right, we let them know that the language pair you are requesting for is not something that is just as easily gotten as other languages that maybe that are considered high resource. And so sometimes there can be a bit of a delay. And what I do in that instance is that I try to give a buffer of a couple of days so that mm-hmm. we understand that anything can happen at any point in time. This person might need to do this thing at this different time. And you build in that time so that it doesn't create any urgency, or there isn't any issues when it comes to delivering when you said you would be delivering to them, basically. Yeah.
So as a project manager, it's basically your job to predict all of the shit that can go wrong before it goes wrong and build in contingencies. And you still hope it doesn't go wrong, but you build those in from the beginning. Yeah. Basic project management. Yeah.
Basically, yes. And then one thing that I found that is really helpful during when working on projects is to give the linguist the opportunity to decide what channel of communication they want to use. Because you might be more comfortable with your emails, or you might be more comfortable with your phone calls, but for them, that doesn't work.
Right.
For them, they prefer, I don't know, WhatsApp, Telegram, something. For them, that's the easiest way to reach them. So usually you find that for some people, you can send them your email, sure, but you still need to call them to make sure that they are aware that I sent you an email, so please check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think having that relationship with the linguist is something that is important, especially here in Africa. The respect has to be given, because people feel that I'm prominent in my field. I am important to you, so you should accord me that kind of respect. Yes, basically. So that's one thing that I tend to do. I tend to give them the opportunity to choose which way they prefer to communicate, and then we go ahead and use that. But then we also have that official means of communication, obviously. We have our emails, we have our systems, but you can reach me at any point in time via this, and then we can go from there.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add. These are all things that I've realized myself. It's good to hear it from an expert, so I know that I'm on the right track. Well, we're right at the hour mark, which means we're kind of out of time. But before we sign off for today, I've got a lot of stuff to plug here because we talked about a lot, and I brought up a lot of websites here. So we got the ALCA, the Association of Language Companies in Africa. Check out their website for more information. Follow them on LinkedIn for updates directly to your LinkedIn feed. We've also got Bolingo, of course. You can check out their website. It's bolingoconsult.com. Excuse me, to find out more information. They also post stuff on LinkedIn, so it's a good follow on LinkedIn. If you go find their page here on LinkedIn. Of course, follow Mary. You can find her. I don't have you pulled up as a tab here, but search for Mary, follow her on LinkedIn. If you are interested in Akon News, it's akonnews.com. News, daily news in Fonte and Tri. So I guess, I mean, if you speak Fonte or Tri, it's interesting. But, you know, my Tri's a little rusty. So I probably won't be a daily consumer of that. But definitely check out, oh, there's you. Definitely check out the African LSP podcast. Available everywhere, available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all of that stuff. It's a good listen just to kind of open your eyes. They've got a bunch of different episodes by now. I remember when you first started. But it's a good listen. You got a bunch of different episodes. So that's my closing pitch. Mary, any final words for our audience before we check out?
No.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a great way to start my Monday. Great way to start my week. And I'll take us out here. Appreciate it. So, ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of Nimzy Live, then join us next time by following us on LinkedIn and seeing when we publish schedule new episodes. I appreciate our guest, Mary, and all the folks behind the scenes at Bolingo Consult. I appreciate my colleagues here at Nimzy Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And finally, I appreciate you, the audience, who are joining us live today, all of the questions, comments, and criticisms in chat. And I very much look forward to next time. Cheers.